An update from Augusta. Maine's 129th legislative session ramps up this week. Lawmakers will now be in session 3 days a week instead of two in order to get through all of the bills before them. There are several high-profile issues still on the table, from legalized sports betting to paid leave, vaccination exemptions to red flag laws. Plus, the deadline for a new state budget looms. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The legislature has already moved through some significant bills, including the creation of Indigenous Peoples Day and a first-in-the-nation polystyrene ban. What bills are you following? What do you hope will be priorities for the legislature in these final weeks of the session? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Maine legislature is in full swing. Last week, it made national news by passing the first in the nation statewide polystyrene ban. But debate continues over many items: sports betting, paid leave, vaccination exemptions, among other bills before the legislature. In the studio with me to talk about the latest news from the State House, Senator Nate Libby, who is Maine's Senate Majority Leader and a Democrat serving third term representing Lewiston. Mal Leary is also with us today. He is Maine Public's senior political correspondent. We invited House Republican leadership to join us today, but they declined our invitation. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the current legislative session? What would you like to see the legislature focus on? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And welcome to both of you. Welcome, Mal, and welcome, Senator Libby, to Maine Calling. Mal, the pace is quickening up here.
It is. Legislature goes to actually having sessions 3 days a week from two. We're seeing scores and scores of bills killed in committee. Many of them are duplicates, so they're getting them out of the way, leaving one bill to be the vehicle to debate, let's say, ranked choice voting or any particular issue you want to bring up. So the pace is building. But what's really going to be crucial to all of this is the budget. That's the one thing the legislature has to do by the Constitution, is pass a budget by July 1st. So that's going to start becoming more and more important as they've had the public hearings. Now they got to start the hard work, and that is deciding exactly what items are going to be funded and at what level.
And Senator Libby, Mal says by July 1st, but really you want to be done before then.
Right. Yeah, I think our goal is by Memorial Day to have a loose agreement on the big picture items in the budget. That's the goal. I think we need to give time for the revisers to draft the document. I mean, it's a many hundred page document. And then we need to have time for votes back and forth between the House and the Senate and then getting it to the governor's desk. So we're working backwards from July 1. We don't anticipate being here on July 1 like we were 2 years ago to try to finalize negotiations. We'd like to be well ahead of that.
So agreement on big items by Memorial Day, which is 3 weeks from today. Are you on pace to make that?
I think so. The Appropriations Committee has been working since basically the beginning of the session, receiving reports from all of the various subcommittees of the legislature who've vetted smaller portions of the state budget. They've taken votes in their subcommittees on those lines and forwarded them to the Appropriations Committee. And now the AFA committee is taking all that information and trying to boil down which issues are left to negotiate. I think Mal would agree that probably 90% of the state budget is agreed upon unanimously, and it's that remaining 10% that tends to cause some of the issues, cause some of the consternation. But ultimately, we've had over the last 20 years lots of unanimous bipartisan budgets. That's our goal this time around.
I want to ask you, Senator Libby, about the tone and tenor of this legislative session. How would you characterize how things are going? Would you say that we're operating in a bipartisan manner? Would you say that we're operating with good faith, or would you say that's not the case?
I think so. I think there's definitely a big change in how the legislature interfaces with the executive branch. I think we were really hindered over the last several years of trying to craft policies and trying to pass a budget without partnership from the executive branch, from the commissioners who have all of that information that we need to make decisions. So in that sense, I think the relationship is much better than it was just last year or the year before. I think among our Republican colleagues, we are still operating in an environment where we need bipartisan support to pass legislation. You know, there have been several votes where just because you have Democratic majorities in the House and Senate doesn't necessarily mean the Democratic version of a bill is going to pass. And so in that sense, not a whole lot has changed. We still operate in a world where we need Republicans and Democrats to negotiate and come up with deals.
It isn't the reality, Nate, that even among Democrats, there's a lot of disagreement. I mean, you may all want to say we want more money for education, but you ask either the House or the Senate caucus are going to come in at a different level because there's another set of priorities people want to fund.
Yeah, we're a big tent party. I think we've got Democrats who represent urban coastal areas and Democrats who represent rural inland areas. And a lot of our positions are based on where the people we represent are coming from and what they're asking of us. But the same is true, I think, for Republicans as well. I think you have similar disagreements. I think they're healthy disagreements. I don't think it's a sign that there's tumult here in the state house. But obviously, you know, we work by consensus here through negotiation, through amendment. You're never going to see a Democratic Party that is unified on any issue, lockstep, you know, 100%.
Let's talk about some of what has passed already. And these are headline-generating bills. Just this past week, Mal, Maine passed a polystyrene ban. This is a first in the nation ban. I have a high school friend who's a legislator in Hawaii, and she is envious of Maine for having passed this styrofoam ban. What does this say about the Maine legislature?
Well, it says that Maine legislature, as it has for as long as I've covered it, is very much attuned with trying to improve the environment. The reality is the science has developed. The plastic polystyrene breaks down into these incredibly tiny beads of plastic that don't want to go away. And we end up eating it in our seafood. We end up eating it in our beef products and pork products because this plastic material gets in there. We still don't know what the scientific impact of that may be on our health going forward. So lawmakers are taking the step and saying, we don't need to use this. We have alternatives, fiberboard, paper products that will break down in the environment
reusable, recyclable.
Yeah, they break down so that you can have them recycled into other purposes where polystyrene does not, as do many other plastics do not.
Senator Libby, also this session, and the governor's already signed this one into law. We no longer have Columbus Day, but Indigenous Peoples Day in Maine. This is a bill that's come up over and over the years. Why did it pass this year?
I think the state's relationship with Maine's tribes reached a low point during the LePage administration, and I think many of us are very committed to rebuilding that relationship over time. I think changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day is a symbolic gesture in that direction. I think it's a small step. I don't think that's all the tribes are asking of us, nor do I think that should be the only thing they ask of us. But, you know, I think I remember in high school reading the textbook on Columbus, and then I remember my teacher providing me an alternative version to consider, which was by Howard Zinn, who I think told a more accurate picture of who Columbus was and the fact that he didn't discover lands that were, you know, just there for Europeans to discover. So I think, you know, over time, we've come to realize that the Maine's Indigenous people have been asking us to consider making this change, that Columbus was perhaps not the hero that many of us thought he was, and that this would be a better time to take a day to recognize the contributions of Maine's Indigenous people and to take a moment to consider the history of Maine's Indigenous people.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the bills still in the pipeline. Mal, how many different bills concerning paid leave are out there? And which ones have traction? This is kind of confusing because there are more than one bill that are seriously being considered.
And there's more than one way to provide paid leave. There's a proposal from Speaker Gideon that would create a tax system that would fund it. There's another proposal that would fund it by employee-only contributions. There's one out there, one version on an amendment I read that would simply mandate that businesses pick up the cost. So there's a lot of discussion about the need for paid leave. The real battle is how do you pay for it? And I think that's what is being struggled right now in committee as they're trying to figure out how do we come up with a system that works, that will provide some benefit to folks who don't have paid leave. I mean, the 45,000 people who are in unions basically have paid leave through their union contracts. But we don't have that with a lot of employees. So you got a sick mother, you got a sick kid.
You're sick.
You're out. You lose that money. So this is an attempt to try to provide some paid leave. And don't ask me, ask Nate, which one of these is going to get through, because it's a very difficult situation to come up with how to fund it.
Okay, Nate, which of these is going to get through, if any?
So I think some of them could get through. I know one that's furthest along in the process is the bill offered by Senator Millette. She's from Cape Elizabeth. This is the concept of employees accrue earned paid leave as they work. And I think it's a maximum of 5 paid leave days could be accrued in a year. The purpose could be for taking care of a sick parent or a sick child or, taking care of yourself when you're sick. There would be no new taxes involved, it's accrued by employees putting in the time and earning that benefit. And I think most employers of, 10 employees or less would be exempted from the bill. Over 10 would be included in the bill. And I think that's the furthest along in the process. I think that's got support from the governor's office and perhaps Republicans, some Republicans as well.
Nate, would you say that this is a priority of your caucus to come up with some sort of paid leave bill this session?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things we heard on the campaign trail was the struggle of working people. I mean, we are well aware of the struggles of seniors and folks with disabilities, but the economy in Maine, although it's growing, is certainly leaving some people behind. And the economic impacts of not being able to take time off to care for yourself or a sick loved one, the public health impacts, both of those, I think, were very important for us in considering to make this a priority. And I'm pleased to see that we're pretty close to getting it done.
All right. We'll talk about vaccination exemptions. Mal, correct me if I'm wrong, but the House passed a bill that would only provide for a child could only go to public school if they're vaccinated unless there was some health reason that they could not be vaccinated. Medical reason. And then the Senate, your body, has amended that a bit to allow for a religious exemption. What does that mean now? That just happened last week. How does it work up here when there's agreement on a bill, but there's a significant difference in that bill?
Right. So the House passed one version of the bill. The Senate passed a different version of the bill. Our Constitution requires houses be in agreement to move laws forward. So we have to reconcile that agreement somehow. The amendment that was attached in the Senate to add a religious exemption back in to law passed by a single vote. So now we're in a position where the two houses, if they cannot come up with an agreement on a bill, the bill just dies. And so no change in the law would happen. If the House and the Senate can come up with a negotiated compromise, that then could get advanced and get sent to the governor's desk. A third option is the Senate could reconsider the vote it took a few days ago and perhaps back off of that position and come into agreement with the House. So passing a bill that would eliminate exemptions for philosophical reasons and religious reasons, pass the same version that the House passed. So those are the three kind of choices before us. My hope is we can get a bill to the governor's desk that really tries to focus on improving public health in our schools among our young people who are attending public schools, and recognize that we're in a period in this country where outbreaks of contagious disease are on the rise. We've got some very concerning situations in lots of different states. I think a lot of us are concerned with the number of folks who are opting out of vaccines. And, you know, I think in part my generation doesn't have the same understanding of what it means to be struck with some of these contagious diseases. I mean, polio and measles and mumps and whooping cough. I mean, you know, these were much more common, I think, in the early and mid 20th century and have all but vanished recently. And so, you know, some doctors have said to me, vaccines are a victim of their own success. They've been so good that a lot of us don't understand what the consequences are for not vaccinating.
Nate, you said one of the options may be that the Senate reconsiders. Was, and that the vote was one by one, was everyone in attendance that day? If you reconsidered, would there be a different vote? Would somebody have to change their mind?
Yep, all 35 senators were there last week when we took the vote. So, you know, it is... common sometimes for members to change their votes when presented with new information or different information. I'd also suggest that the calculus may be different now for some senators because before they were voting on a religious exemption to a bill that was moving through the process. Now their vote, based on what the House has done, is either a vote to agree with the House or to basically insist, and insisting would kill the bill. So the individual senator's calculus is different now. Do we want to move forward a bill we may not agree with 100%, or do we want to kill the whole effort? So in that sense, perhaps we'll get some senators to reconsider.
And the bottom line nature of the process is try to reach agreement. What Nate left out was they could go to a committee of conference and try to come up with some other language that people could agree on. So there will be all these parliamentary maneuvers that will confound us as the session goes on to try to reach some sort of an agreement.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are live in Augusta. We're talking about what's going on in the legislature. Here we are in the beginning of May, and things are really picking up. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lamy Wellahan Shoes, committed to reducing greenhouse gases at all their locations throughout Maine, because what's good for the environment is also good for business. And Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
All Things Considered reports on, well, everything. But how does a story come together? I'm Audie Cornish, and first, journalists at NPR share ideas.
Morning, everybody. Working leaves today, China trade talks.
After China, can we go back to the soybean farmers?
We hunt for a pitch that's timely, newsworthy, and compelling.
I'm kind of with Mary Louise on an analyst voice.
From there, producers search for the right expert to speak to a given topic.
I'm calling from NPR. I've been in contact with Richard Clark.
A director ensures the mics are on and things are to time.
I'm going to bring in Mary Louise. She wants to just say hi and kind of run through what we'll be talking about, and we'll get a level for you as well.
Then it's airtime.
Former White House counterterrorism chief Richard Clark. Hey there.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Every step is important, and it all starts with you. When you give every month, you help the news get made. Become a sustaining member now.
Spring is here. If in doubt, check your calendar. Also upon us, and not in doubt at all, is our spring Let's Grow Together membership drive. Hi, this is Jennifer Rooks, host of Maine Calling, asking you, calling you, to do your part for your public radio station. Any amount of financial support helps our community make public radio possible. We start our on-air campaign on Tuesday, May 7th. It will be over just as soon as possible. You can help by pledging now at mainepublic.org or, yes, by calling 1-800-866-1475. And thanks.
Our Let's Grow Together membership campaign gets started tomorrow morning.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, an update from Augusta on the current legislative session. Joining me, Senate Majority Leader Nate Libby and Maine Public Senior Political Reporter Mal Leary. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we will start with a Facebook post. Kyle asks, serious property tax relief and school budget funding.
So the state has a really significant role to play in these municipal funding decisions, whether it's on the property tax side to support municipal services, or whether it's state funding for public education. The community that I represent, Lewiston, we receive, I think, over two-thirds of our school budget from the state. And that's really significant. We're still not at the 55% level of state funding for local education that voters have asked us multiple times to hit. Governor Mills' budget proposal gets us closer by a couple of percentage points, but we're still off the mark. So I think Democrats in the legislature are looking at how can we find savings in the budget to increase that public education figure to get us closer to 55%. The other big conversation is if we've got revenue surplus, how could we help direct that to property tax relief locally? There are a few ways we can do that. One is through the state revenue sharing program, which provides a portion of state income tax and state sales tax back to towns and cities to help them support local services and need to raise less in property taxes. And then there's an idea we've been toying with and made some changes in the last couple of years, increasing the homestead exemption. That's a popular program for Maine resident homeowners. It helps direct property tax relief to folks that call Maine their home 12 months out of the year without necessarily benefiting second homeowners on the coast and that sort of thing. So those are part and parcel to the budget conversation. We've got to figure out what we can raise for revenues and how we might distribute them to towns and cities to help them with property taxes.
Now, since we're talking about the budget, what else is in the budget that's also a big issue on its own?
Well, the big issue that the Republicans bring up constantly is they think the budget's too big, that it's too ambitious. And the reality is, before the revenue reprojection that we just got, Governor Mills left, I think it was $400,000 out of $8-point-something billion, which is, you know, really cutting it close, which she admitted because she expected that there would be an increase. We've got some extra money because of the revenue reforecast, but even that is not anywhere near what folks say is needed. I believe to go to 55% is $157 million. Well, that's not there. So as Nate was saying, there's a lot of discussion. How do you provide property tax relief? There's a real strong group of folks who say it should go directly back to the people who are paying the property tax. The other folks are saying it should go through some mechanism to help the municipalities because they've lost help from the state over the last 8 years. I think that's going to be one of the battles. Where do you come up with a balance of how do you return some of that money? The overall level of taxation. If you talk to Republicans, as I'm sure you have, Nate, you know, they're saying some of this money ought to go to reduce taxes even further in some targeted way. And some money ought to be set aside in what we call the rainy day fund, because people understand what that is, instead of the budget stabilization fund, which is its legal name, because everyone is worried that we're going to have an economic downturn in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And right now we've got a significant amount of money. It's around $279 million sitting in that account. But that pales in comparison when you look to how much money is spent in a year. So those are a lot of issues that I'm hearing from the Republican side in terms of what they want to see in the budget.
We'll go to Gary, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Thank you. Just a quick statement, then I'll hang up. I'm actually, you know, surprisingly a Republican in Southern Maine. There's lots of us in Portland. Very annoyed when I watch things on TV like Attorney General Barr and, you know, what he's done with the Mueller report. But my question is, what is wrong with passing a law like Illinois did to require all presidential candidates, whether they're running for re-election or running for a first time, to in order to be on the ballot in the state of Maine, to provide the people of Maine with their income taxes.
Oh, interesting question. Mal or Senator Libby, have either of you heard of a bill, a measure to require presidential candidates to...
I heard the idea tossed around in December before a cloture date. I'm not sure if a bill was actually filed to do that in Maine, but I am aware California legislature recently passed through the Senate a bill to require disclosure of tax returns before they allow a candidate to get on the ballot.
There are, 1,700, almost 1,800 bills that have come in this session. Did you try to look at all of them? And I don't recall seeing that one as I've read through the bills as they come tumbling in every day.
So if Gary wanted to have a bill like this, what he does is contact his local rep, right?
Yeah, as a representative in the House or state senator.
All right. We'll go to Angela calling from Burnham. Hi, Angela. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, my name is Angela Einstein, and I'm a teammate on the nonprofit here in Burnham, Maine, called A. Einstein Universe. We are fully recognized, and we are concerned with marketing of pharmaceutical products and how that's being overseen on the Internet and the transition from the Internet into mainstream. We feel that a lot of the messages are being guided by pharmaceutical companies who profit off of addiction medicine. Addiction medicine is a brand new medicine, medical specialty in 2015, and the marketing that has risen from that is cause for concern, because it's hard to believe measles if you can't believe what they're talking about behind closed doors. Addiction is addiction, and the only thing to have changed is the marketing platforms.
Angela, do you have a question for our panel?
Well, I just want to say that I love Maine Calling, I love NPR, and I love the freedom of speech, and I thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you, Angela.
Thanks, Angela. So Senator Chipman from Portland introduced legislation regarding pharmaceutical advertising, and I think he's concerned with the fact that, across the world, it's very few countries allow pharmaceutical companies to advertise their drugs to consumers. I think it's the U.S. and New Zealand are the only two states that allow that. And so he's looking at, how could we amend state statute to put greater restriction on how pharmaceutical companies can market their products to Mainers, and that's a bill that's in the process.
And there's been several attempts over the years to try to do this, and it runs up against federal preemption. As long as Congress is saying this is all right, there's little the states could do. They kind of have to try to work around the edges. So this is really a federal issue that we should be asking the congressional delegation about.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Ron calling from Sydney. Hi, Ron. Go ahead. Ron, go ahead. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, now I can. Thank you.
Okay. My question is why is it taking the legislature so long to put some kind of fee or tax on Poland Spring for extracting a public resource? I hunt deer, I hunt turkeys. Whenever I buy a permit, a license, I have to pay an extra fee to hunt turkeys. That's a public resource. I have no problem with that. And Poland Spring is extracting a public resource, and they haven't been assessed any fees for extracting that public resource. And aside from the fact that they're a wealthy company and got lots of lobbyists, why hasn't the legislature done?
Okay.
Since I've been here, I think proposals perhaps have passed the House or passed the Senate, but not both. And I know the governor in the past, Governor LePage, has not been supportive of really any new tax or fee. There definitely is a bill in this session to assess an excise tax on large extractors of spring water, and really in Maine that amounts to Poland Spring. I think one question that legislators sometimes ask is, how would Poland Spring, who extracts water from the ground or from public sources, how would they be different than a brewer that is extracting water and then making a product, packaging it and selling it? So if we're going to assess the fee on Poland Spring, should we then also assess the fee on Maine's brewers? And then I think you get into real unpopular conversations, because who wants to hurt Maine's craft brewing industry? So I think that's some of the tension that's been existing over the years.
All right. Thanks so much for your question, Ron. We'll go to an email from Constantino. What is the level of difficulty to change the Maine Constitution to allow ranked choice voting for all positions? Mal.
It takes a 2/3 vote of both branches of the legislature to propose a change in the Constitution. Then the voters have to approve it. Right now, Republicans, particularly in the House, are opposed to ranked choice voting. They just do not like it at all. And they have more than enough votes to block that 2/3. So the issue is quite simple. It's one of numbers. Until you come up with 2/3 in both branches, the voters won't even have a choice in the matter. The Constitution stays the way it is.
All right. We'll go to Katrina calling from Camden. Hi, Katrina. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Every elected official in the United States, from the bottom to the top, takes an oath when they take office to protect and defend the Constitution. Now, the Puritans, when they came to this country, decided that freedom of religion was extremely important. As you know, it's the First Amendment, and government ought not to be allowed to prevail over God. In fact, the dollar says, in God we trust. Then the legislators who take that oath and hypocritically try to legislate religious rights away. Now, to mandate a vaccine, which is known to cause injuries on children in the United States of America, is not only ungodly, it's outrageous on the part of the politicians who hypocritically take that oath to protect and
Sure,
defend.
Katrina. So you see the vaccine exemption issue as a First Amendment issue. Nate, what do you say to that?
Well, we've had mandatory vaccine laws in America for many, many decades, I think going back to the 1800s. There's been a lot of litigation on this point, and the courts have ruled that when it comes to weighing the balance of individual rights and providing for the common welfare, that on the issue of vaccinations, the state does have the ability to require mandatory vaccinations. I absolutely understand the caller's concern about freedom of religion to practice in a way that you feel is right. But to my knowledge, and I've been reading a lot on this issue, I'm aware of no major religion that has, as one of its tenets, objection to vaccination. In fact, I've seen letters from many religious leaders who encourage their parishioners, their practice, the folks that practice their religion, to get vaccinated. So, I think this is definitely a tough issue. I know lawmakers take seriously their constitutional obligation, but that obligation requires a balance of individual rights versus providing for the common welfare, and there's a tension there.
Katrina, thanks for your call. We have an email from Sherry. Outdoor light fixtures illuminating neighbors' yards and into the house affect quality of life. Are there laws regarding nuisance wood smoke and excessive lighting from neighboring properties next door, less than 100 feet? Wood smoke is so bad we have to go inside, a daily issue this winter and spring.
It's a great question. I don't have any specific knowledge off the top of my head on that.
All right. And this would, Mal, this be the kind of thing that would be legislated locally?
Well, there is legislation dealing with the amount of smoke emissions that you could have from a private home. But I'm sure it doesn't go far enough for this person in terms of how much smoke is being generated. On lighting, there's a public nuisance standard that comes up every now and then around Christmas time, when people kind of go overboard with some of their Christmas decorations. And
overboard?
Overboard, yes.
I just call them festive.
Yes. There's one here in Augusta where you go down the street and the house is totally illuminated. You know, every kind of light you could think of is there. Every tree is lit up. And it is a distraction as you're driving because there's so much light coming from the house. So I understand the concern, but I don't think there's anything on point to what she's asking.
Nothing in the pipeline right now. We have an email from JD. Public chartered school options enroll over 2,400 kids in Maine who choose to attend them. These are public, accountable, nonprofit programs meeting the kids' needs. Each child gets the same allocations for operating funds, whether they attend public district or public chartered schools. Members of the education committee are trying to limit them, politicize the authorizing commission, and find ways to close them through LDs 307, 513, and 1638. Why are Democrats trying to close options for Maine children?
I don't have a ton of information on this subject, but I do know that, you know, we have a cap to the number of charter schools that can be open statewide. I think that cap is 10.
And there's one license remaining, correct?
I believe that there are 9 that have been licensed, 1 that remains to be offered or pursued. I think the conversation is, do we want to allow more charter school licenses when the 10 that have been allocated have not been used yet? And, you know, I think we've fixed some of the funding issues surrounding charter schools in the Skowhegan area. There were 2 charter schools very close to Skowhegan High School that was siphoning lots of state money away from Skowhegan. We've largely fixed that issue by taking money off the top of the GPA funding formula to pay for charter schools. But I think there's a general hesitancy about opening up new applications when the 10, to my knowledge, the 10 that have been allotted haven't been taken yet.
All right. We are talking about what's going on in the legislature. If you have a question or a comment, you can call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do BCM Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve. NHLandLaw.com. Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Friends School of Portland, for preschool through grade 8, teaching peace in a changing world. More information at friendsschoolofportland.org.
It can seem like all political news comes from Washington, D.C., but really, a lot of stories start where you live.
Whitney Evans of member station WCVE has the latest.
Eric Newman of our member station KUER in Salt Lake City has an evaluation.
Susie Ahn of member station WBEZ in Chicago has the story.
Member station KJZZ's Laurel Morales reports from Flagstaff.
I'm Scott Detrow, and when local politics becomes national news, I want to hear what this station is saying.
I'm Rachel Bay in Columbia, Maryland.
Frank Morris in Kansas City.
In Fort Wayne, I'm Barb Anguiano.
I'm Farida Javala Romero in San Francisco.
To keep you, your neighbors, and the entire nation informed, public radio reporters are on it, covering City Hall and the State House. This station is where the story starts. Help it go further.
Our Let's Grow Together membership campaign starts tomorrow morning, but you can contribute right now at mainepublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475. And thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest on what's happening this legislative session. My guests are Maine Public's Mal Leary and Senate Majority Leader Nate Libby. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Darwin calling from Rockport. Hi, Darwin. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm just wondering if the legislature is doing anything on the CMP corridor, or is it entirely up to the PUC and the governor?
So the PUC, Darwin, thanks for your question. The PUC has concluded their proceedings on the CMP project. It's now in the hands of the Maine DEP and the Army Corps of Engineers for their final approvals. There are a number of bills in the legislative process to try to slow or stop the project. The one that I think has the most traction is a bill sponsored by Brownie Carson from Harpswell. He's a state senator. He's proposing a fast-track study of the greenhouse gas emissions for the larger region outside of New England to assess whether the CMP project is actually going to lower greenhouse gas emissions or not. There's a pretty quick timeline for DEP to hire the consultant that would do that work, have that consultant perform the work and return it to the legislature by, I think, the middle of August. The idea there is that it probably would create some additional political pressure for the DEP to not issue the permit to block the project. I think there's definitely strong feelings on this issue. I know a lot of the public is very much opposed. I'm looking at this, I think, in a different way, which is if we're going to be serious about confronting climate change, we have to get used to not using fossil fuels to generate electricity. We've got to come up with alternatives for coming up with that electricity. And if we're going to be using more electricity as a main economy, we've got to get used to more transmission lines. So if we're going to say no to this project now, what's the next project down the road? It could be a 100% green project, but if it involves building more transmission corridors, are we going to say no to that as well? I think it's perhaps not a perfect project, but if it gets us closer to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, I think we should be supportive of it.
Darwin, thanks for your question. We have an email from Bruce. I understand that every one of the too many members of the legislature wants his or her name on as many bills as possible. But how on earth can it be good for us to have 2,500 some bills introduced per legislature? This just chews up way too much time and requires too many staff members. Cut it down to critical bills. Okay, so leadership does try to cut it down to critical bills,
well,
correct?
In the first year of the two-year session, any legislator can submit any number of bills they want. Often,
And they do.
And often a number of those bills sponsored by individual legislators are requested by constituents from their district. It could be a business interest, a nonprofit interest, a citizen who just has an idea. And I think legislators are generally good about saying, okay, this is a citizen of Maine who has a legitimate idea. I'm going to bring their idea forward through a bill, have the hearing, and see where it goes. Most of the bills are not enacted. I think 80% or more are voted ought not to pass, and that's the end of it. In the second year, though, of the legislative session, there is a process for limiting how many bills are introduced. It's a bipartisan 10 legislator panel who votes yes or no on whether a new bill can get introduced. So I think it's not a perfect answer, but the process here in Maine, I think, is designed to be democratic. Every citizen can have their voice heard. But in the second year, there are some limitations.
And you got to remember that the governor and the agencies also contribute 200 to 300 bills every session that they want considered. And some of those bills might be considered as frivolous as those that some legislators put in. So it's part of the process that we've always had traditionally in this state that goes back to town meeting. At a town meeting, you could bring up anything you want to bring up, and people do. So it's the continuation of that historical nature with the legislature. Okay, somebody wants a new state flower, then we'll look at the new state flower.
Mal, have we seen more bills being introduced since the advent of term limits? And that was one of the things that opponents of term limits were saying, that there wouldn't be as much institutional memory and we'd be going back over the same material more often.
Well, I'm not sure it's institutional memory, but we certainly have bills being repeated time after time after time. But that may be more of a function of somebody thinks it's a good idea, and so what that it didn't pass in the 117th, it'll pass in the 119th. And that goes on a lot.
Okay, we'll go to Skip, who's calling from Stonington. Hi, Skip. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I'd like to ask Senator Libby a question about three bills that are in the Labor Committee this year. One has to do with allowing public employees the right to strike. Second one has to do with allowing mandatory binding arbitration for public employees for wages, insurance, and benefits. And the third would allow teachers the right to negotiate education policy. And the reason I'm calling is the school boards all over the state of Maine are really concerned about impacting their ability to provide leadership for Maine children. And I'm a former legislator who supported labor, but these bills, I think, have gone too far.
Thanks for the question, Skip. I think, first off, all these bills are being vetted right now and are likely to be amended if they are to move forward. So when it comes to public employees' right to strike, I think there's obviously some concern over equity when it comes to other folks in unions being able to strike and use that as a negotiating tactic, whereas public employees often cannot. I think some concerns around that, and I haven't read this bill or any amendment yet, but how do we deal with law enforcement officers and other public safety personnel? I mean, I can imagine what would happen if, a community's police force is on strike. You can imagine what criminals may do in that situation. I'm sure committee members are considering those things. So that one, I think, still needs some work, and I'm not ready to commit one way or the other yet. The other one is mandatory binding arbitration for wages. I think you'll hear from teachers especially who would like to have mandatory binding arbitration, because when it comes to wages, they can go to arbitration and an arbitrator comes up with that middle ground solution for management and for employees, but wages are left out. And basically, it's management's last best offer that gets approved. So clearly, there's a negotiating imbalance there. And then the third one is the right for teachers to negotiate certain education policy issues. I think teachers, again, are sometimes frustrated when they go to negotiate with management and they bring up something like class size. And management, the superintendent's office, says, well, you know, class size is an educational policy. We can't talk about that. I view it differently. I think that's a working condition issue. Certainly a teacher teaching a class of 12 kids has a very different workload than a teacher teaching a class of 24 kids, and I think that should be part of bargaining. So I'm inclined to support an amended version of that bill.
Skip, thanks so much for calling in. We have an email from Ross. Is anything being done about Maine's terrible litter problem? I live in Brunswick, and our litter here is awful. It is not only an eyesore and social issue, but it tremendously hurts the environment and individual organisms. Last year, I spent 6 hours cleaning up litter on a 1/4 mile stretch of road in Brunswick. So wondering if anything's ever going to be done about this. Why couldn't we use our prison labor or community service to help with this statewide issue instead of using the DOT?
That's a great question. Ross, a couple of years ago, we passed a new deposit law covering the small liquor bottles that are called NIPS. The purpose of that public policy was to greater incentivize folks picking those things up off the road. We just recently passed a law that's going to phase out styrofoam containers for food products. Those products, and Mal mentioned it, when they disintegrate, they turn into a million pieces that are impossible to pick up. I think that hopefully will help. We've got a bill working through the process now that considers banning plastic bags for the use in the state of Maine. We know that plastic bags are a big source of pollution in the ocean, and my hope is that we can move that bill forward. So I think we're trying a lot of different approaches to try to tackle the litter issue and the landfill issue.
If you go out of state, you realize how much we are doing. Our bottle deposit law is one of the first in the nation. It has taken a lot of litter off the road. I was in Dallas for a conference a few weeks ago and was astonished at the crap that was along the road in that city, which is one of our largest cities, and they can't keep up with it.
I'm struck by the same thing, that even though I wish there were no litter at all, there seem to be a lot more people littering, especially on highways in other states. Mal, you know, nobody's asked a question yet about this, so I'll ask you because I know you're doing reporting on it. The Supreme Court has issued a decision that makes it easier for states to pass laws allowing sports betting, and several states already have done this. I know that our own Senate president has introduced at least one, I think two bills about sports betting. Where are we in the legislature on that?
There are several sports betting bills, and the whole idea is to provide some sort of structure to oversee the gaming and to get a proper tax revenue off it. Like other states are doing. Now, one of the things that the experts have cautioned in testimony before the legislature's Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee is don't expect this is going to be a lot of money. It's going to cost something to regulate sports betting on the internet, and that will take money out of the stream that you could possibly tax. So the consensus I'm picking up from that committee is we got to do something. We've got to have a framework in place. But this is not going to be a big new revenue source like casinos were for the state. It's something we got to do because everybody else is doing it.
We'll go to Debbie calling from Wyndham. Hi, Debbie. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. My question is, the legislature at all concerned over the lack of checks and balances in the DHHS system, particularly for persons with developmental disabilities?
Yeah, Debbie, thanks for the question. We spend a ton of time working on DHHS oversight issues. DHHS is by far the largest state department. I mean, it's not even close, the second largest department. So many programs touch so many lives of vulnerable people that I think we are struggling to keep up with all of the different pieces to it. I think as well, we've had a really hard time over the prior 8 years getting information out of the LePage administration and the various DHHS commissioners when we've asked for information, when we're trying to exercise our oversight role. So you saw a shift, and Mal knows this, to going to the Government Oversight Committee and subpoenaing DHHS officials to get information out of them. We did that recently around Child Protective Services. To answer your question, there are a number of bills looking at tightening up oversight and spending and reviewing contracts for programs that work with people with developmental disabilities. And my son is one of those folks who's in that population. We have similar challenges and can definitely appreciate where you're coming from.
Debbie, thank you for your call. I'm going to try to squeeze in one quick question. This is an email from Jeannie. Recycling, or lack thereof, is a huge monetary issue for state, local governments, and citizens. I have been an avid recycler for years, and now our recycling center is closed. We now have more trash, as do others, so our town will have more costs for trash pickup. As the state recently passed the ban on styrofoam, what is it going to do to help with the recycling issue?
So Jeannie's brought up a great public policy concern, and I think based on the information I have, this is really a global issue where our markets for sorted recycled products have tanked in a lot of ways. It's very hard for recyclers to ship cardboard now to foreign markets where we used to ship them. I don't have a silver bullet solution. But it's a major problem, and I think we're going to try to figure out some ways to help improve recycling rates and help make the recyclers whole and keep them in business.
Well, thank you, both of you, for being here today. That's going to have to be our last question. The voice you just heard, Senator Nate Libby, a Democrat from Lewiston and Senate Majority Leader. Also here, Mal Leary, political correspondent, senior political correspondent for Maine Public. Nikki Shields ran the board. We had additional help from Dan Works and Gil Maxwell. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.